And welcome back to the Heavy Metal Podcast for the week of April 29, 2013. And welcome back to the Heavy Metal News Podcast. We used to be the Punk News Podcast, but everyone wants heavy metal. With me today is Tricky Ricky Franco. Tricky Ricky, are you down with the heavy metal?
What's up, John?
Oh, heavy God, metal!
That didn't work out.
And also, we are with Mark. Mark, are you down with the heavy metal?
Dude, I'm so metal, I need two hands.
Wait, what?
I said, I'm so metal, I need two hands. I'm doing my little two-handed metal salute right now.
Well, fantastic. Well, you know, welcome. You know, a lot of people have been saying, you know, punk rock is old hat. People saying punk rock is old news. People want to hear about the heavy metal. So from now on, this is going to be the Heavy Metal News Podcast. We're going to talk about heavy metal. We're going to talk about all your favorite heavy metal bands. We're going to talk about Winger, Quiet Riot, Nazareth, you name it, Cinderella, Y&T. We're going to talk about all the hot new heavy metal bands. And on today's podcast, I think we'll start off with talking about the greatest heavy metal band of all time, Judas Priest. Judas Priest has got a brand new song out. It's called Redeemer of Souls, and it's actually off their new album called Redeemer of Souls, which is their first album in 6 years, and it's also the first without founding member KK Downing. Are you guys Priest fans? Did you guys check out this album? Are you guys excited for the new Priest album?
I checked out the song. It was pretty good. Have they lost anyone else from is other than that one guy that left? Is this the original lineup?
No. Priest has had a lot of lineup. Like the core lineup is Rob Halford, KK Downing, Glenn Tipton, and Ian Hill. They've had a lot of through a lot of drummers. The most recent drummer is the guy I think from not Armored Saint, something X, Racer X, I think is the name.
Yeah, he was in Racer X, but Scott Travis has been in the band since I want to say 1990 or 1991.
Actually,
he's the longest drummer in the band.
88 since I Ram It Down. So, Mark, you are a big fan of Judas Priest. It sounds like.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up as I was a metal and punk kid when I was growing up in the late 80s. So, I mean, Judas Priest, I saw them in the arenas on the Painkiller tour, and I also saw the Ram It Down tour. And yeah, Priest was a big deal for me when I was a kid.
How was the Painkiller tour? Was it like awesome?
It was amazing. In fact, if you go, you can go on YouTube and you can find a full length concert of it. I think it's from Detroit, if I'm not mistaken. And it was huge, you know, the big set and the lights and everything like that. And they were just all leathered out, and it was kind of like it was a nice cap to the end of the first Rob Halford era.
What do you think of this new track, and are you sad that KK Downing is not on it? Because I'm sad that KK Downing is not on it.
I like it. It sounds like Priest. It sounds like what Priest has always sounded like. But when I was listening to it earlier today, it just kind of made me think about how they've turned into one of those bands where they put the new record out and the fans are excited to hear it, but it kind of falls kind of the wayside, you know. It almost seems like an excuse to go out and do a tour or something like that. And I feel like Priest has kind of turned into a nostalgia act, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, honestly, that's a good point. It's a real shame because really, Priest, I don't even think Priest was a nostalgia act up through Nostradamus. Even though, I mean, that was a whack album, Nostradamus.
That was a horrible, horrible album.
I mean, Turbo Lover isn't that bad, but for Priest, it's tough to do worse than Turbo Lover, and they did worse than Turbo Lover. But what's sad is, like, you know, they came out with Revolution, which was the first Halford album in, like, 10 years or whatever, you know? And actually probably even more, like 12 or 13 years. And I thought Revolution was a great album, and also it seemed like people were excited to hear those songs. But now it just seems like, here's another song, it's kind of Priest-y, but it's not great, you know?
And I'm also not sure, because on the last tour they did, they made such a big deal, as so many older bands do now, about this is the last time that we're doing it. And so I really don't know if they're going to have touring plans after this, even though it seems like, you know, they've got to be playing some kind of shows. But I do remember a couple of years ago they said they were dialing it back somewhat. And I think that's when the new guitarist came into the band.
But are you bummed that KK Downing's not in the band anymore? Because Priest was the first heavy metal band to have two lead guitarists, Glenn Tipton and KK Downing. That was actually a fairly radical invention that they created in the music world.
Well, that dueling guitar was a huge sound of the band at that time. But the new guy, I mean, he plays the old riffs just like KK did. I'd be interested to hear how much of the new record he actually plays on.
That's a good point. Ricky, are you a Priest fan? Do you have any Priest albums? Are you excited for this?
I haven't been a huge Priest fan, but I liked what I heard from this song. It was pretty cool.
Ricky, do you have any Priest albums?
I don't.
Well, Mark, what three albums should Ricky get to educate himself in Judas Priest?
Screaming for Vengeance, Defenders of the Faith, and Painkiller.
Yeah, that's a good selection. I would say British Steel, Hellbent for Leather, and Sad Wings of Destiny.
British Steel is a classic.
British Steel was actually kind of like heavy metal meets punk rock. Like the songs were sharp, hard, and fast, you know?
And in fact, let me just say this. There was a few years ago when Judas Priest did their British Steel anniversary tour. And they filmed, I think it was one of the last shows, they filmed for a DVD release. And yours truly was at that show.
For the British Steel reunion show.
Yeah, it was at the DVD show they filmed down here in South Florida.
Yeah, actually, no, you can get a CD of that, and it is a fantastic live album.
And I will autograph that CD DVD set for anybody that comes up.
Well, that's wonderful. And speaking of punk rock meets heavy metal, Slayer just basically said they're forming a new label. They put out a new demo, and also this is going to be their first album without dual guitarist Jeff Hanneman, who passed away, I guess, about a year ago, a year and a half ago now. So, did you guys check out the new Slayer song? Are you guys excited for new Slayer?
I was a little bit confused by this. Were they on a major label before, or did they have their own label and now they're making a new one?
No, Slayer at first was on Metal Blade Records, and then they jumped to American Recordings with Rain and Blood, which is like kind of their most famous recording. Although before that, they had not Welcome to Hell. Mark, what's the album before Rain and Blood? Not Welcome to Hell.
Hell Awaits,
yeah. And then before that, they had Evil Has No Boundaries. Is that the album, Evil Has No Boundaries? I think it is. Anyway, so they had those two classic albums, and they had Rain and Blood, which is like a lot of people consider it the greatest thrash album ever, and I might as well. So they were on American, which is Rick Rubin's label. But, I mean, after like their four classic albums, how many classic albums did they have with Rick Rubin? Rain and Blood, Seasons in the Abyss, South of Heaven, and Decade of Aggression. So they had like four classic albums with Rick Rubin, and then they stayed on Deaf American, but the band hinted, like, as the years progressed, that Rick Rubin, even though his name was on it, he didn't really do anything with the band. And frankly, I think you could tell. Like, if you ask me, Slayer got kind of crappy in the 90s. They rebounded a little bit in the 2000s. But I think the age of Slayer... Oh, so anyway, your question is this their first album not on a major label? It's the first album not on a major label since 1986.
Wow. I didn't realize they were all around for so long.
They've been around since 83.
Wow.
So that's over 30 years. That's 31 years.
It's so cool when you look at old pictures of Slayer, especially when you look at Tom Araya, and he looks like the old wizard, like Gandalf of heavy metal now. And you look at him back then, and he's such a kid.
I like when like in the earliest, when they have like makeup on and stuff, you know, they're almost like a glam band. But Slayer's cool. I didn't think this track was that great. And honestly, I hate to be a hater because I'm a huge Slayer fan. I saw Slayer on the old school Slayer night. About 4 months ago, 5 months ago, and I've seen Slayer, I guess, about six times. This was the first time I've seen him in about 7 or 8 years. It felt like the magic was gone, honestly.
I get that. I mean, you know, a big part of that band is gone now. And, you know, I know Kerry King played a lot of the guitars on the records and everything, but Hanneman was a big writer with that band. And I just think that those guys, I don't know, I feel like they're kind of over it at this point. In a way, it feels like they're filling out obligations and then kind of moving on. There are things that Tom Araya has said in interviews that just make it seem like Slayer's kind of coming towards the end, unfortunately, because I'm a huge Slayer fan.
Ricky, where do you stand on Slayer?
I can take them in small doses. I really am not like a death metal person.
Slayer is not death metal, my friend.
Well, metal, heavy metal. Like I take that in small doses. I tend to stay, you know, Morning Glory.
Mark, if Ricky wanted to check out Slayer, what album should he check out?
Decade of Aggression is really? One of my favorites. I love that because, I mean, I love the live records, but Rain and Blood, if you want to go studio, Rain and Blood, you can't go wrong.
I say start with Rain and Blood, expand outward from there. I'm a big Slayer fan, but I think the magic's gone. I'll check out this album, but I'm not like, it's not that I'm not looking forward to it, but I'm just not looking forward to it. You know what I mean? So, anyway, thanks for listening to the Heavy Metal Podcast! Heavy Metal News Podcast! This track is by Riot! From their 1988 album, Thunder Steel. This track is called Thunder Steel Heavy Metal! So I guess we've reverted back to the punk news podcast as opposed to the heavy metal podcast. What do you guys prefer, the heavy metal news podcast or the punk news podcast?
Punk news.
I can tread water in both worlds.
So anyway, you know, we got a bunch of mail lately. Ricky, you were on when we had the guy from Emory on the podcast. Mark, you were not. we got a bunch of, about, I guess it was 3 or 4 weeks ago now, we interviewed Toby Morell. He's the lead singer of Emery. Emery is a very, actually, they're a very, very popular Christian punk rock band. They're actually, like, if you go by Facebook, they're, like, way bigger than pretty much every punk news band there is. I mean, but Facebook-wise, they're bigger than Against Me. They're bigger than Gaslight Anthem. So that's
dude, I hate
big.
To say it, but you lost me at Christian punk band.
Well, that was the point of the interview. The interview wasn't to say how great they were. The interview was to see, was there an inherent conflict between the ideals of Christianity and punk rock? And honestly, Toby didn't adequately explain the two apart for me, if you ask me. What do you think,
no.
Ricky?
No, he really, he kind of, at least from what I got out of it, he kind of talked in circles and then somehow, like, sort of answered the question like 70%, but wouldn't go all the way, you know?
You're saying he's a Christian that wouldn't go all the way is what you're saying?
That, no, not at all.
I believe that's a problem a lot of Christians have, is that they won't go all the way. But actually, Ricky, I hope you don't mind me bringing this up, but I think Ricky took particular offense to him because Ricky's Jewish, or at least his heritage is Jewish, and so he was bothered that Toby said he wishes everybody was Christian. Ricky, do you mind that if we bring that up or mention that briefly?
No, it's fine. I just want to say, like, I wasn't, like, offended because, like, the guy has his own beliefs. That's fine. But, you know, it takes balls to say that. But I wasn't, like, insulted. I was just more, like thrown off. You know, like, when a dog kind of turns its head in confusion? that's kind of, like, how I was. I'm like, really? But, no, you know what, we tried to get, the more important thing was we tried doing a good interview, and that's what I cared about.
I think I would give the interview a B. I say solid B with that interview. So anyway, you can reach that podcast at punknews.org if you want to hear more daring stuff like that. That's podcast at punknews.org. And we actually got quite a bit of email. This came from Jason. Jason said, "Hey, John G, I am from Texas, and I want to refute Toby's claim that everyone in the South is Christian or even religious at all. Mike Ness is the living legend." So that was from Jason. So thanks for that, Jason. So we got another email. This is from Dave. Dave said, "What was the name of the female-fronted band you guys played on the podcast recently that John G. described as stoner rock? Would have been in the last 4 or 5 episodes. I went through the podcast notes but couldn't recognize any of the band names." Dave, that was Workhorse 3, which I think Mark is reviewing. Mark, have you checked out Workhorse 3 yet?
Yeah, I have, as a matter of fact, and that review is coming very, very soon.
What did you think of the band?
As a whole, I dug them. There's a couple things. I mean, they didn't change my world or anything like that, but I definitely dug it. I've listened to it a lot more than 2 or 3 times. I can assure you of that.
Yeah, so that was Workhorse 3. Let's see, we've got a couple of other emails. Let's see here. Maybe we'll save this one until next time because this is a long email. We got another email from Richard, which is not Ricky. This is from Richard. Richard said, "Thanks for doing the interview with Toby Morell from Emery. I appreciate hearing different viewpoints on the podcast. It'd be interesting if you had other religious groups on as well." Signed, Richard. I don't think I want the Punk News podcast to become like the religious podcast. You know what I mean? But I wouldn't be opposed to it. But I'm interested in just talking to people of different viewpoints. You know. And then actually, this was from. Let's see here. This one was from. Let's see. Let me pull up real quick. This was from Alex. Alex says, "What? Well." I'm going to summarize what he said. Alex said, "I'm disappointed that you had a Christian punk rock band on the Punk News podcast. Punk isn't about that." So that's Alex's opinion, and he's entitled to that. So
let me ask a question. I'm sorry to interrupt because I unfortunately didn't catch that episode. But what exactly is the problem that people have? I'm an atheist, and I have no religious belief whatsoever. But I don't understand what the problem is that people have with "quote unquote" Christian punk rock or Christian metal or whatever. I mean, if it's not their bag, why are they so offended by it?
Well, that was kind of the point of the interview was actually like both ways, I guess, on the attack and on the defense. On one side, if punk rock is about, you know, inclusion and about understanding different people's viewpoints, then why shouldn't Christian punk bands be, I guess, considered valid by the punk scene as whole, which generally they're not? But the other side is, though, you know, I mean, are the ideals of Christianity, or at least Christian punk and punk rock, in direct conflict? And I kind of think maybe they are.
They definitely were.
Yeah. So anyway, go ahead, Ricky.
Yeah, no, remember the one question I asked was about, like, what they, if they've ever come in contact with, like, bands that, like,
oh, yeah,
you know, advocate for the gay community. And, you know, he did his whole long circle thing where he kept talking, and then it's like, we focus on one sin too much, blah, 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 blah. And, and then he says, but yeah, homosexuality is a sin, which I don't believe. I'm an atheist too. But yeah, I mean, I think it definitely, some things clashed for sure, which I think made it a good episode though.
I think he would have been able to more get people on his side if he said, yes, they do conflict and I'm not able to rectify. Or when I said to him, have you ever had any conflict with any other bands? He's like, not really. I don't believe that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I didn't either.
Like, every band has conflicts with other bands, no matter who you are, you know, particularly a band, a Christian punk band that's in, that ventures out into the non-Christian punk scene, you know? So, I mean, I respect Toby for coming on, and I admire his guts, because he was coming into enemy territory, if you will, but I think he would have been more believable if he had been more open or honest and less full of spiel. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So anyway, speaking of band that is full of something, NoFX is going to play Punk in Drublic in its entirety at Groz Rock, at the Groz Rock Festival in Belgium. And I gotta say, if you look at the Punk News comments and the Punk News Facebook, this was a huge article. People are really excited for this. Are you guys on the NoFX bandwagon? I think, Ricky, I think you're a fan.
I am, yeah.
Would you guys like to see this? Do you think they'll bring it to the U.S. shores? Or, I mean, is NoFX's heyday over? Or are they still a viable band?
I wasn't a fan of the last album that they put out. But, I mean, I saw them in, was it like December or January? And it was a good show. They didn't do all Punk and Drublic. I don't know why they would necessarily do that. I know it's like a great album and stuff like that. But, I mean, there's so much other good stuff from the albums, from the album or two before it. And stuff after. I mean, also, I've noticed that they almost never play anything off the Ribbed album, which I don't know why, because that's a rocking album.
How about you, Mark? Are you a fan of this? Are you excited for this?
I'm a NoFX fan, and I saw them last December when they came here. They played right around my birthday down here, and I seem to remember about a month before when Melvin put a tour video out that they were saying that they were going to play that in its entirety. And I was kind of waiting for it, and it never happened. And I love that record. And I don't have a problem with bands doing that, but I think it's gotten a little played out.
Actually, you know what? I've seen bands do their whole album live. And it, honestly, it's kind of boring for me, to tell you the truth, because it's like one of the fun things for me when you go to a show, it's like, what are they going to play next? You know?
True.
But like actually, bring it back around. I saw Slayer do Rain in Blood. I love that album, you know, but honestly, I really didn't enjoy it as much as I could have, because the whole time I'm like, can't wait for the song Rain in Blood, you know? So I almost like didn't enjoy the first 9 songs because I was so excited for the breakdown, you know? So it's like, but however, I did see the Melvins do whole albums live, and it was awesome for two reasons. A, live, the Melvins do like completely different arrangements of the songs, but they also do the songs out of order, which was a lot of fun too.
And also, you're a huge Melvins fan.
True. But I'm a huge Slayer fan, but I enjoyed Slayer more than Melvin. I mean, I enjoyed Melvins more than Slayer, because I think Melvins put a little bit more work into it and made it more surprising for core fans. Because, I mean, that's who wants to hear whole albums, you know, is core fans. So
okay, let me ask you this. Let me ask you this, then, as a fellow fan. If World Inferno were to play a full album in its entirety, what would you want them to do?
I'll tell you, I would love to see Addicted to Bad Ideas, because it's like a whole play with, like, actors and stuff. But if it was just, like, the album live, Red Eyed Soul, because that's my favorite World Inferno album, I think.
Yeah, I have to agree. I love that record, and I would love to have seen the Addicted Bad Ideas show.
They only did it like 6 times.
Still never seen a video of it.
You've seen a video of it?
No, I still haven't seen a video of it. And I remember talking to Jack one time, and he said it was out there, but still haven't been able to find it.
Yeah, but that's the thing with World Inferno. Like, he said that to me a couple times. He's like, oh, there's demos of this song out there, or different versions. I can't find them. And it's because, Mark, I think you and I are huge Inferno fans, but I don't think we're quite Infernites. And, like, Infernites are very gregarious, a very gregarious group. They stay within their own, and like if you try to learn more about like stuff they have, they won't share. You know,
that's kind of true. But I will say I do have an Inferno tattoo.
Oh, what kind of tattoo do you have?
I have the two evil tattoo.
Where at?
On my thigh.
Ooh, on his thigh, Ricky. Do you have any Ricky, you have any band tattoos?
No, I don't have any tattoos.
I've got a Y and T tattoo on my back, like the big Y and T.
Yeah. Get out of here. Do you really?
Yeah, man.
I want to see a picture of
and
that.
And I've got Cinderella on my left thigh, and on my right thigh, I've got Winger. So, yeah.
I'm going to call you Beavis from now on.
So speaking of glam rock, it looks like it is – people have been joking about this for a while, the emo revival. But it looks like more or less the emo revival is legit, and it's been a very hot topic, people arguing back and forth about whether or not it's legitimate or not. And whether or not emo is a valid genre. Like, one of the things is on the internet, a lot of people are arguing on who's responsible for the emo revival. I want to know, why would you want to take responsibility for the emo revival? I really just don't get it. But
let me just say right now, for the record, I am not responsible for the emo revival.
Neither am I. But I suspect Ricky might be an emo fan. Ricky, are you an emo fan?
No.
Oh, you're not. Well, I'll tell you, lots of people are. Man, people are going crazy over it. But I wonder if it's Emperor's New Clothes, you know? Anyway, I'm dragging this out. The point is Mineral, who is one of the most famous emo bands, is going on a short tour at their first in 17 years. Wow. The Jazz June are releasing a new song. That's like their first song in 12 years. And also American Football is going on tour, I think, and releasing a new song. And that's like their first in like almost 14 years. So everyone is so excited because all the emo bands are back. Are you guys excited? And what am I missing about emo? I just don't get the deal with the emo. You know, I really don't get it. But here's the weird thing is, I mean, I'm not trying to be – well, I won't get into it. But I mean, what? Why is everyone so in love with emo? I don't get it. Explain it to me.
I like Hugs as much as the next guy, but I don't get it either. And I remember a time when Hot Water Music was considered emo when they first came out.
Really?
As well. Oh, yeah. Like the first few records, they were considered to be emo records. Embrace, Ian MacKay, considered to be emo. And I know that early Fugazi, some people wanted to label as emo. I mean, if you want to call Fugazi emo, I'm all about Fugazi getting back together, and I'm all about that.
But would you agree that Embrace emo is way different than Mineral and Jazz Union emo?
Absolutely. I look at it as just hardcore, to be really honest with you. And I remember Ian MacKay saying one time when they asked him about being emo, he said, "Isn't music supposed to be emotional?" And, which I totally agree, but the label emo just gives a totally different connotation to the music.
Honestly, that's Ian MacKay being a little too cute for school, too. You know what I mean? It's like he knows when they say emo, they don't mean emotional. They mean like, you know, quiet, reflective, mid-tempo.
Exactly.
You know, but that's Ian being a little cute. You know what I mean? Like he knew what they were asking him, but he chose to dodge the question. You know?
Exactly. No, I got that, too.
Ricky, man, what are we missing on the emo? I know you're a huge emo fan. I know you got whole bunch of Mineral posters up in your room.
Totally don't have emo posters in my room. No, I don't get it. I mean, I knew kids in high school that were totally into it, and they were also, you know, they cut themselves too. I don't understand why this is coming back. I thought this was kind of over. Would My Chemical Romance be considered emo?
Not, I mean, yes, but not by these bands, you know. Like fans of My Chemical Romance will say they're emo, but I would say they're probably not emo. They're really just more like pop rock, you know, with a slight goth facade.
Okay.
Whereas I think like Jazz June and Mineral and American Football are quote true emo bands, at least as emo scholarship has talked about. You know,
I don't know. You know, at least for the bands that I've heard that have been considered emo, there's a lot of like that whining in the vocals that just drives me insane. So I just avoid that shit.
Do you guys agree that people are going nuts over this? Like I think the American Football thing sold out in like 3 minutes or something, or Mineral sold out in 3 minutes. Do you guys agree that people are going crazy over the emo revival?
I think what it basically says is that there's a lot of people that know something that I don't, because I'm totally not into it. And I remember seeing Brittany getting really excited, saying that she'd score tickets to see American Football. And that's rad. Great.
Brittany who?
Brittany Strummer, I believe.
No, you got that wrong. I think you're thinking of Kira.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. My bad. Sorry, Kira. But yeah, it just I don't get it, but people are excited about it. Great for them. I know what it's like when I'm excited for bands that get back together or bands that I'm really into seeing, and everybody I know could care less.
But do you remember how insane people went when Outkast got back together? And no one even talks about that anymore. It was like 3 weeks ago.
Oh, well, because mainstream audiences like have the attention span of like, you know, a fly. Then they don't really, they're just on to the next thing.
Do these emo maniacs truly, truly, truly enjoy emo to this degree, or is it all a hype train?
Well, maybe this is nostalgia too. These bands haven't been around for a long time now.
Honestly, I mean, I know what nostalgia means, but what does it mean in this context? I really don't know. Well, people are going to be like, what do you mean, John, you don't know what nostalgia means? The definition of nostalgia is basically a fond or even less fond remembrance of days past and a wishing of that time to be returned again, you know, or a living in that time period. So that's what nostalgia means. But when people say, oh, yeah, man, American football, it's nostalgia, are they just saying that they never really liked those bands to begin with or that much? They just are more reflective of the time, and so the band generates that time in their life for them? Is that what it is?
Maybe, yeah.
I don't know, man. I was buying Van Halen albums at that time on cassette. So anyway, we sound like haters. Honestly, I think we three have sort of similar taste in music. Like me and Mark are metal maniacs, and me and Ricky are punk rock maniacs. So we kind of get on the hate train on this when it's us three. You know what I mean? We're like emo yeah. Sucks. You know, but what are we missing out on? And actually, a little while ago, we said what are we missing out on hardcore? Somebody emailed us a big list of what we should listen to hardcore. We'll read that next week because I don't want to draw this podcast out too much. But by all means, podcast listeners, tell us, what are we missing on emo? Like what is it that makes emo so great? You can reach that podcast at punknews.org. Speaking of things that are great, the Poozafest is coming up in Montreal. Punk News is co-sponsors of Poozafest, and there's a lot of hot bands playing this year. We mentioned them last week, so we didn't mention them all this week. But Poozafest is May 16, 17, and 18 in Montreal. I'll just name a couple of the bands that will be there very briefly. Included at Poozafest is The Hold Steady, Reagan Youth, Mad Caddies, SNFU, Dillinger 4, Menzo's, and Tim Barry, and a whole bunch of other bands. And so it's probably going to be a pretty hot festival. And by hot, I mean cool. And so if you're into that kind of thing, go check it out. Meanwhile, in a festival down south, the Fest has announced its third wave of bands. As you know, the Fest is the usual org-core-centric punk rock festival held around Halloween. This year, it's October 31st to November 2nd in Gainesville, and also October 29 and 30 in Ybor City. Bands announced this time are actually some bands I'm pretty down with: Painted Black, Jeff Rosenstock, but also announced is Creepoid, The Dopamines, The Arrivals, Iron Chic. Hard Girls is cool. Who else has got listed? Copyrights, Radon, American Sharks, Sundials, Pool Party. That's a cool band. Mineral, Iron Chic, and a whole bunch of other bands. Are you guys excited for any of these bands? Oh, Posties are going to be there. Adventures, Asshole Parade. Are you guys excited for any of these bands? Are you going to Fest this year? Is it cool to see Jeff Rosenstock solo?
I've never seen Jeff Rosenstock or or anything he's played, so I'd be into seeing that. I've got a real soft spot for the Copyrights because that's the first review that I got published on Punk News. And Pool Party, I agree with you. I totally dig me some Pool Party down here. And the Fest, I don't know. I'm kind of bummed out about the Fest just because there's so many Florida exclusive bands. Like, that's the only Florida show they're going to play. I live in South Florida, and 6 hours is kind of it's a bit of a haul for me to get up there. But I do understand how they want to attract people to go up there. So if I can make it, there are some bands I want to see. But I don't see myself knocking myself out to get up there this year.
Yeah, I don't think I'll be able to make it either. I want to go to I've never been to Fest, and I want to go really badly. But no, I've seen the Dopamines before. They put on a good show. I've also never seen Jeff Rosenstock perform live, so I want to see that. Copyrights. And I think I'm seeing Hard Girls open for Andrew Jackson Jihad in July.
Yes, yes.
So I'll be seeing them in Hollywood.
Oh, Hollywood.
The Troubadour.
Well, fair enough. Let's break for a song. Last week we talked about Stig Miller, and actually you guys dug Stig Miller of Amoebic's demo cut called I Go Dark, correct?
Yes.
So let's play. I actually got a message from Stig. I said, Stig, can we play your new demo? And he said, we totally can. And he says it actually is working on an EP, which is super exciting. This is I Go Dark by Stig of Amoebic.
Thank you.
are back. Do you guys feel darker, scarier, and more enlightened because of Stig Miller's his purely emo track, and a track is that goes to the core of people's emotions? Was this track see, this track was emo for me. Was this track emo for you guys?
Makes me wonder. Go ahead.
Pure emo. I loved it.
Makes me want to listen to American football now.
Well, speaking of bands that make me want to listen to American football, Bomb the Music Industry, who, as we all know, broke up in February, or split up or ceased to be around, I think it was February. Well, they've been working on a director named Sarah Crowe has been making a Bond Music Industry documentary for about 4 or 5 years now. She's put up a new fundraiser for the final push to put the documentary for final production. She's asking for, I think, $25,000, and actually she's already made it. I think she's surpassed it by quite a bit. And are you guys excited for the Bond Music Industry documentary? And further, this whole documentary has been extremely prolonged, and people have been critical of it for them asking for too much money, for being so long. Do you think if she puts it out, it'll put the naysayers in their place, or is the damage already done?
I don't know. I mean, I was kind of stoked to see this trailer. I want to see how this works out. I did not know though that they've been working on it for so long.
So you have no jadedness or annoyance towards this documentary?
Not really. I mean, I like this documentary and the Fat Wreck documentary. I just genuinely want to see. Like, I don't really have anything against it. This stuff takes time.
Me too. I feel the same way. I'm a big sucker for documentaries about about bands, about labels, about scenes and things like that. I'm really excited to see both of these.
Do you guys think like the anger towards this documentary or the jadedness is overstated?
Yes. Did you see Joe Rosenstock was like commenting all over this page?
I did, and I wonder if he took it a little bit too personal. You know, I often deal with this too. It's when I interview a band, sometimes I get criticism and whatnot. And in some respects, you want to engage them because people say stuff that's just unfounded or incorrect or shows they really don't understand what you're talking about. But on the other hand, I don't know why, but sometimes you have to maintain a professional distance. And I guess there's a certain dignity to a professional distance. And I'm not exactly sure why that is, but it seems to hold true, you know?
Right.
I think it's also difficult as an artist to be able to look at every commenter that has everything to say about your band and about what you're working on. You've got to be able to keep some kind of distance. You're absolutely right. Sometimes I think it's better not even to pay attention.
But it is important to point out that the Bond the Music Industry, the band, is not putting out this documentary. Sarah Crowe, who's an independent person, is putting it out with the band's permission. So that's an important difference. Moving on, White Lung has released a new track. It's called Drown with the Monster, and it's about body issues with regards to women. Frontwoman Mish Wei said, "That song's about body dysmorphia and its residuals. I feel like there are two women battling in my head sometimes. My completely confident self, who can tell anyone to F off at the flick of a finger, and this other woman who hates herself, her body, her mind, not because she actually hates herself, but because she has been told by her culture to hate herself for not being more, better, thinner, prettier. Being crippled by hatred for your own body? Why? How did this happen to our effing culture? Did you guys like this track? Are you guys excited for the new White Lung release? Are you excited for the new White Lung album? I think Mish Wei is a very interesting front woman, and I'm glad we have her in punk rock because she's feminine. But she's and I use feminine and well yeah I mean she's feminine but she's very strong a very strong feminine that is she's a feminist that's I don't know how to put that like I guess she's happy to be a woman but she's very strong in that position. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. I've never until a few days ago when you had mentioned new release, I had never ever paid attention to the band. I'd only heard the name. And I got to say, I really liked these two songs. I'm anxious to hear what the new record sounds like.
Yeah, I think I'm going to check this out too. This is my first time hearing the band. Do they always have like the electronic sound along with the punk.
No, that's new. Actually, they used to be almost all organic.
Because, like, I totally think I would have liked the first song more if it didn't have that electronica thing in there.
Really?
Yeah. But that's just me.
Well, fair enough. I'm excited for the new release. And what do you guys think of her statement? Do you think that, obviously that is an issue in society. I'm glad that Miss Shuae was able to, I guess, put it so succinctly and so directly. I think not a lot of artists would say it as clearly and as powerfully as she does.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of, who was I reading about? Wait a minute. What's her name? The lead singer of Bad Cop. Why am I blanking on her name? Here, let me look. Stacey D. She also, like, she seems to be, at least when I saw them, she seems to be, like, this confident type on stage that Miss Shuae was talking about also. So I don't know. I wonder. I think as a guy I can only, you know, think about this so far. That's the thing. I don't know.
You think a male can't really understand the point that she's making because they are a male?
I don't know. I mean, I don't want to, like, I usually don't want to overstep that bounds. But I do think there is a need for more all-girl bands in the scene, for sure.
What Lung is not an all-girl band?
Oh, I'm sorry. I must have missed.
But they are a band with prominent females in it. So, I mean, that's something, you know.
Yeah.
So anyway, moving on, Subhumans are going on tour with Mischief Brew. That's the UK Subhumans, which honestly, I'm super excited for this. And I was surprised at how, I'm not sure where the state of punk rock is, because people are like, oh, Minerals getting back together, we're so excited. And then they don't say anything about MDC. But for some reason, the Subhumans going on tour was a really big deal, and a lot of people got excited for it. I know I'm excited. I'm a huge fan of Subhumans. I'm a gigantic fan of Mischief Brew. So this is a super exciting set that I'm excited to see. I know it's not coming near you, Ricky, and actually, Mark, it looks like it's not coming towards you either. But do you think it's a good pairing? Would you guys go see Subhumans had you the chance?
Yes. I can't say that strongly enough. I would totally go see Subhumans if I had the chance. I saw them once with World Inferno. And I also saw Mischief Brew with World Inferno, and wow, what a gateway band that they've been for me. I would love to see these two bands play together. I really wish they were coming down here. That bums me out a lot.
Yeah, I would see this, and there's that first date with the Guantanamo School of Medicine and Negative Approach. I would love to see that, but no Subhumans. That's too bad.
Well, fair enough. You know, the interesting thing about Subhumans is they're really, I mean, they're not quite first wave anarcho-punk, but they're very close to first wave anarcho-punk. And, you know, like, when Amoebas got back together, when Antiset got back together, people were insane, and as rightly they should, because, I mean, those are phenomenal bands. But Subhumans more or less have kind of trucked along the whole time. So, like, they're, like, really the last remaining. I mean, Subhumans were around when Crass was still, you know, at their height. So, it almost, in some way, Subhumans have been detrimental towards themselves for trucking along so constantly. You know, like when Subhumans come through, people get excited, but it's not like a huge event, when maybe it really should be a bigger event, because they're like the last surviving anarcho band, you know? Originally.
I don't even know the last time they came down. I mean, the one I saw them was, I think, 6 years ago or 7 years ago. So, I mean, they don't really come around very, very often.
Well, they are from the UK, to be fair. And they often tour as Citizen Fish, which is basically Subhumans, but ska, you know?
Yeah.
So anyways, I'm excited for that. And let's see what else we got here. Oh, let's wrap this podcast on up. Did you guys check this out? Aaron Friedman, who used to be known as Gene Ween of Ween, but then Ween broke up quite non-amicably. He released his first track from his upcoming album, which will basically be his first album of original material, following a covers album of, I forget who he covered. He covered some poet, I think. And so, did you guys check out, For a While I Couldn't Play My Guitar Like a Man? And did you guys check out his demo collection, which was his last release as Gene Ween?
I didn't get it.
What do you mean?
I just didn't. It didn't do anything for me.
You know, I used to be like, Ween is definitely one of those bands where like it's tough to get, and then when you do get it, like it all makes like it's such a gift when you get it, you know, because like I guess dipped in Ween for a few years before I finally got it, and then when you get it, it's like a thrill, you know.
I used to have the song, the Ocean Man song.
Ocean Man, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, like that song was cool, but like I didn't like this track. It didn't do anything for me.
Yeah, Mark, what did you think of this track?
Unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to listen to it, but I will say that it bums me out to hear the way that the way that Ween broke up. I didn't realize that it was unamicably, but it does seem to be that.
That's the word I was looking for. Acrimony. It was an acrimonious breakup.
Okay. That really bums me out because it seemed like the brothers, which also wrote the Ramones, which seemed like the brothers. And we all know how that was. But when I heard the last set of demos and it's, you know, Gene's gone, it just it seems like he looks back at that time with a little bit of disdain. And I know that he's straightened up and he's off drugs and all that kind of stuff, but it does make me feel bad as a fan to feel like he looks back at that 20 plus years like something negative in a way.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know what it is, but you want your favorite bands to get along, right? Even though it doesn't really make a difference, like from a pure enjoyment standpoint, like you want, like Ween feels like two pals, two brothers in it together. And the way they broke up was kind of a bummer. I definitely think it was Aaron has been quite clear that like it wasn't that he had to get off drugs. And the only way he could get off drugs was to leave Ween. So it seemed like the rest of the band or Dean Ween wanted to keep partying and Aaron really wanted to get clean. And that's what led to the breakup, you know?
Hey, whatever's good for him, and obviously his health is the most important thing. And I didn't realize that it was the drugs that really came between him and the band. But I really am sad to see as a fan that he feels negatively towards that such a long and influential career.
Mark, you are a Ween fan.
Yeah, I was a Ween fan when I was in college.
Mark, what two Ween albums would you recommend to Ricky to check out?
Guava Jelly. I believe it's called Guava Jelly. I forget.
I think it's called Guava. Guava.
Guava. There you go. In the pod.
See, I would recommend The Mollusk and probably. I would recommend The Mollusk and Live at Stubbs is what I would recommend. So anyway, I guess that wraps up today's podcast. Any hot shows you guys are going to? Anything exciting you guys are going to next?
I saw Pennywise last Friday.
How was that?
It was, I mean, for it was right. It was in Petaluma, and it was awesome. I got up on stage right next to Fletcher during their last song, "Bro Him." Teenage Bottle Rocket opened up for them. It was. It's like my last show in NorCal, so it was a good way to go. Oh,
are you moving from? You're moving from the Bay Area?
Yeah, I'm going back down to LA.
Are you sad? Or are you happy?
it's bittersweet. I'm looking forward to going back down. And then I got Leftover Crack opening for the Addicts. Late May, and then two Against Me shows the day after.
What day are you leaving the Bay Area? What are you going to do your last day in the Bay Area?
Graduate.
Fair enough. Mark, anything exciting coming up? Any good shows? Have you been to any good shows lately?
I'm so bummed out because there are no shows that are coming anytime soon that I'm into seeing. And the last show that I went to was Off With Their Heads at the end of February with The Slow Death. And it was the first time I had seen The Slow Death, actually. I totally became a fan after that.
Well, fair enough. And let's close up today's podcast with a track by Sean Black. We've played him on the Punk News podcast a couple of times. He's a true Bay Area MC. He's a hard-hitting, old-school guy. But he runs actually a recording studio called The Trap Shop, and he records for tons of artists. He puts out tons of music. This is a track from his new album, Sunset, and this is Sean Black.
Lord, forgive him.
Drums.
Lord, forgive him. Lord, forgive him. Lord, forgive him.
Bass.
Lord, forgive him. Lord, forgive him. Lord, forgive him.
Now everybody maintain for a minute, get blazed, feel the rhythm. Amazed how we came from the pain and he winning. Never been a come up, niggas paraplegic, never run up. I believe in peace but scared to put my gun up. Bullets change more lives than Miss Winfrey. They eating hate for breakfast, DJ Envy. Get it? No Charlemagne, I probably with your daughter naked. Let her try your molly with this water, stay hydrated. She say I'm bad, I say show you right. She like the party, she ain't fucking with them sober types. I keep her overnight, I feed her overbite. Guess I'm the soldier type, my cock swollen, a foxhole. Fuck if I ain't Hemingway. I'm Basquiat with a raspy fox. I'm Warhol on my thug draw, pocket length to use. Middle finger to the action news, I'm going in.
Lord forgive him. Lord,
I ain't never coming back, y'all.
Lord forgive him. Lord,
said I'm going in.
Lord forgive him. Lord,
I ain't never coming back, y'all.
Lord forgive him. Lord, forgive him.
My life, my life, my life, my life. It's in the sun like daddy's bad habits. It's genetic, so phonetically it's fuck you. Never edit me, I'm prophetic and poetical. Smoking on some medical. Lame banger hurt, Kobe game, change your name. Anger every hater from Cali to Las Vegas. To Maui from San O, red eye. See you later, play a different kind of poker. I've been dealing with these jokers since the 90s. No Jack Nick, nigga preheat. They never had a chance, LeBron preheat. That's pretty cavalier, she drunk and only had a beer. I'm trying to steer her out of here and film her with my Apple gear. Aw, lights, camera, action. She behaving black tail, but she looking like Max. Yeah, lights, camera, action. She behaving black tail, but she looking like fuck it. I'm going in.
Lord forgive him. Lord forgive him.
And I ain't never coming back, y'all.
Lord forgive him. Lord forgive him.
Said I'm going in now. Now.
Lord forgive him. Lord forgive him.
I ain't never coming back, y'all.
Lord forgive him. No,
I said a one to the two to three to four. Them bass life boys, they at your dough. And you better have all that money you owe. And you better have all my money for show. One to the two to three to four. Them bass life boys, they at your dough. And you better have all that money you owe. And you better have all my money for show. I'm going in, y'all.
Lord forgive him. Lord,
I ain't never coming back with it.
Lord forgive him. Lord, forgive him.
Going in, y'all.
Lord, forgive him. Lord,
I ain't never coming back with it. Back with
Lord, forgive him.
Back with
Lord, forgive him.
And thanks for listening to the Punk News Podcast. Mark, thanks for being here.
Thanks, guys.
Ricky, thanks for being here.
Thanks, man.
And we'll see you guys next week.